This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The flashpoint was the fate of a two-century-old home on Grace Avenue in Mount Lookout. The buyer, a developer, bought the house intending to tear it down and replace it with a duplex. Neighbors were incensed, not just about the loss of a yellow house, but about what that might mean to other structures and the very character of the neighborhood. Residents of Mount Lookout and Hyde Park demanded the city council stop what they saw as the slow-motion destruction of the built environment of their neighborhoods. They couldn't save the yellow house, but council did impose a 90-day moratorium on the demolitions in Mount Lookout and Hyde Park while city studies the question. To examine the issues involved in this dispute, we are joined today by the president of the Mount Lookout Community Council, Dan Prevo, the executive director of the Home Builders Association, Dan Dressman, and the director of the Department of City Planning in the City of Cincinnati, Catherine Kehoe Jurors. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everybody. Good to have
Great
you
to be here
today.
Thank you, Dan.
Let's just start out. We'll start out with Dan Dressman here. We've got three Dans on this particular interview. So, Dan Dressman, do buyers have to disclose in any way what their plans are for the property? Do they have to disclose that to the people selling, the sellers?
No. I mean, there's no legal requirements that a buyer disclose what they're planning to do with the property once they purchase it.
And do sellers have any ability to put restrictions on what can be done with the property once they sell it?
They can, obviously. They can put restrictions on how it can be developed if they choose to do that.
Okay. So there would have been a possibility if somebody had looked ahead and said, we don't want this to happen.
Absolutely.
Okay. So, Dan Prevo, this all got started over a house that dates back to the 1820s on Grace mm-hmm. Avenue. But this isn't the only house that's in question. In fact, if people are on social media this morning, you'll notice that there's a lot of traffic about a house at 2581 Grandin that possibly might come down and all sorts of things going on about that. So from the neighborhood's point of view, how do you see this issue? How would you frame this issue?
Well, I think this is an issue that is not new for our community. This is something we've been seeing more and more over the last several years. And our community members, there have been some projects that have, generated more concern than others, certainly. Our communities are mostly concerned with just, changes in character. Sometimes the scale of these properties, the proposed projects are, can be out of character with what's, existing on the street or in the neighborhood, as well as some of the impacts on green space, has been a particular concern. Our community is one that's got terrain and therefore has a lot of these kind of green belts almost that run between these streets. And so, those have probably been two of the biggest concerns that we've heard from our community members over the years.
So a concern that not only the immediate lot might be broken up for smaller developments, but also that green space that hasn't been developed could all of a sudden get used in a different way. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I think Catherine is probably the expert on this, but, this area was, largely developed, prior to the city's current zoning. And so the lots vary greatly in size, and some of them are larger than others and, have a large, lot of these old mature trees on them. It's one of the things that has certainly attracted folks to the community. But so that's something we're certainly hearing about from our neighbors.
So, Catherine, in a case of a residential neighborhood, and both, even though Mount Lookout and Hyde Park both have retail centers, these are largely residential neighborhoods. How does the city zoning code, the city vision, the city plan, how do you approach this kind of community, and what does the city see as its responsibility, and what's it trying to do?
Well, Dan, just to tack on to what Dan Privo was saying, this isn't a new issue for Hyde Park and Mount Lookout. We've actually been hearing from them for probably upwards of a decade about their concerns about demolitions and lot subdivisions in their neighborhood. And part of the reason and some of the way that the city looks at it is that when we zone, when we create zones for a neighborhood, and these are, as you said, mostly residential neighborhoods. Yes, there are very vibrant business districts that are at the center of these neighborhoods. But really, what gives these neighborhoods their strength is the residential area. When we zone for what the most common lot size is on that street or on those series of streets. And in Hyde Park and Mount Lookout, it's a little bit different because you do have some of these properties that I'll say are kind of anomalies. They are larger than usual. They may have been the original farmhouse or the original estate for some of these places that some of these streets that made up the original Hyde Park and Mount Lookout. And then we're subdivided over the years into streets, into lots that were maybe more similar size. So these kind of outlier lots, these larger than average lots, are sprinkled throughout Hyde Park and Mount Lookout. They're not necessarily, it's hard to zone for them because of that, because they're sprinkled throughout and we can't.
Because the zoning code would say that an acceptable size lot is X, and these sit on property that could be several times that large.
Correct.
So legally, they could be broken up.
That's correct. So there might be a 20,000 square foot lot that is surrounded by lots that are maybe 6,000 square feet in size. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we've been hearing from Hyde Park and Mount Lookout residents, is that those lots, even though they're not consistent, it's actually that inconsistency that helps create the special character of those streets.
Okay. Dan Dressman, I want to put this in an even larger context. Teardowns are not unique to Hyde Park, Mount Lookout. They're not unique mm-hmm. to Cincinnati. This is something that's going on all over the country, isn't it?
It really is. And I think the majority of the activity that's occurred in Mount Lookout and in Hyde Park has been very positive. In fact, a lot of the builders and developers that have purchased these properties and are repurposing some of the homes that were on those sites previously live in those communities, so they're interested in the aesthetics of the community as well. And I think what we've seen is history of neighborhoods, character changes, okay? It doesn't remain static. I think you can probably go into any neighborhood, not just in Cincinnati, but throughout the country, and you can see where different types of housing was constructed depending on what the period was. And in some cases, the homes that are being taken down and repurposed have been structurally unsound. And so they presented safety hazards. And then the other issue, obviously, is with the current property owners. They may have purchased that property with the idea that at some point in time they're going to sell it, and maybe redevelop the lot that they're on because they know it's a large lot.
In the case of the house and property on Grace Avenue, this was – I don't think it was on a huge lot as I understand it. Might have been oversized a little bit. I'm not sure, but it wasn't huge. And it certainly sold for a lot, and my understanding is it sold for over $500,000. So, you know, the house itself must have been seen as having some value. So, Dan Privo, what happens when houses that still have value in the market are being sold and then redeveloped? What's your reaction to that?
Well, you know, I think our community council certainly has never taken the approach that we're trying to freeze all changes in the neighborhood. You know, we haven't tried to, you know, we've looked certainly favorably on we've had a lot of developers who have proactively reached out to us, you know, as they're approaching a project. You know, they're looking at something like the Grace property or you know, there's certainly been some others over the years where they've come in and proactively talked to us and we've kind of gotten our, you know, our take on it and where possible incorporated some recommendations. And I think in the end, you know, it may not be exactly what you know, every member of the community would, you know, prefer to see there. But, you know, it's something that at least fits in with the community and the surrounding homes. And I think that's, you know, that's what really what we're trying to do here is, actually set expectations for both our existing residents as well as the developers. And, both buyers and, you know, homeowners and the developers can, have set expectations on what may happen in their neighborhood.
Yeah, and I think just to tag on to that, Dan's comments, I think what the development community, builders, developers in particular, they're just looking for predictability. They want to know what the rules are up front. They want to follow the rules. They're good neighbors. They want to be good neighbors. Right. They're going to be around, and reputation is everything in our industry. So they just want to know up front what the rules are. The problem that they run into is when the rules get changed down the road. Then they've got a major investment, and then they find out that their investment's going to be compromised in some fashion. That's when it becomes problematic for not just the developer, but actually the property owner.
Because that property no longer is easily sold.
Exactly.
To anybody.
It becomes encumbered at that point in time.
Okay. My understanding, Catherine, is that the owners of this particular property back in 2003, so we're going back some time here, did try to get it put on the National Register. It was not accepted for the National Register because there had been modifications over the years. They were arguing that, as I understand it, you know, the person who built this, the Reverend Isaac Ferris, was important to the community. It wasn't just the house. It was his story as well. But the house wasn't in the condition that he had left it. And but putting all that aside, what difference in this situation would that have made if it had been named to the National Register?
Dan, if it had been named to the National Register, I can't speak to the National Register specifically. I can speak to the local register,
okay,
which is designated by the city of Cincinnati. And if that had been the case, it would have had to have gone through the historic review by the Historic Conservation Office staff and the Historic Conservation Board prior to demolition.
It would have to go through a review. They have stopped a demolition?
That I don't know. It certainly would have had to go through the process. Maybe they would have stopped it. Maybe they would not have. It's hard to know unless the research had been done.
I see Dan Dressman smiling a bit. Dan, do you have something to sort of throw in there?
No, I just think a lot of times, because it's an older property, a lot of people think it's historical in nature, and it might have outlived its purpose. I mean, I've lived in older houses before, but I wouldn't say that they were historic by any means, but they were old.
Well.
And a lot of times they get changed over the years, too, so they don't have, a lot of the older characteristics they might have had initially. So they really wouldn't qualify, and I think that was the case in with this particular property.
So, Catherine, where do we stand right now? There's this 90-day hold on demolition permits in both Hyde Park and Mount Lookout. What's happening while that 90-day hold is on?
Well, Dan, there's a 3-month hold for demolition permits. It's called an interim development control district, and that's in place until, I believe, September 6th. The City Planning Commission also enacted a temporary suspension to our subdivision regulations, which requires all subdivisions in Hyde Park and Mount Lookout to come before the City Planning Commission.
And subdivision in this case doesn't mean just some big subdivision, but it could just be subdividing
one lot into two. Correct.
Okay.
And just to follow up a little bit on what Dan and Dan said earlier, it's our responsibility at the city to take both the concerns of the residential community in mind, as well as the concerns of the development community, and to piggyback on what Dan Dressman said, we want to be able to provide some sort of certainty for them, actually for both the residential community and the development community, so that they understand what the process is and what's to come. So over the next 3 months, City Council has set up a special working group to look at these issues. And so really, we're all working together to try to come up with a solution. So the Home Builders Association, the Board of Realtors, Mount Lookout Community Council, Hyde Park Community Council, representative from the mayor's office, representative from the Planning Commission, representative from the Economic Growth and Zoning Committee, they're all working with us to try to determine what's the best way to crack this nut.
Yeah. And I think just to tag on to what Catherine said there, I would totally agree. I think we're all working together in a partnership to try to come up with a amenable solution that's going to best in the best interest of everybody involved, because we all have a future in the stake of our city, and we all want our city to succeed. And I think in a lot of ways, this is a positive sign that there's people interested in wanting to reinvest in the urban areas again in Cincinnati. And I think this is just unfortunately one of the results of that.
Dan, it's just been Dan Dressman who's been talking with the home builders. Are you yourself on that committee?
I am not, but we have two representatives that are on there that are very active in urban development.
Okay. And Dan Provo from the Mount Lookout Community Council, do you yourself sit on that committee?
Yes, I'm serving as the representative from the Mount Lookout Community Council.
Okay. And how do you feel that process is going? Do you feel it's something that's open and you have input?
Yeah, absolutely. The group has only met once so far, but I'm extremely optimistic. And I think to Dan's point, I think we all are coming to the table looking for, trying to find that consensus solution that works for all of us. So I'm extremely optimistic about the process. And I will say that, Catherine and her staff have also jumped, head in on making it go smoothly, I think, and on schedule, because we've got a limited window of time to work in.
My understanding is that there's a public meeting scheduled for July 24th, where there will be a sort of an interim report. Is that true?
That's correct, Dan. Between now, as Dan Prevost mentioned, we've met once. This is sort of a new working group, and it took us a little bit of time to organize all of our schedules. But we'll be meeting weekly to work out what this working group wants to recommend to the community at large. And we will be having a public meeting in July. And we hope that at that point, the working group is able to give some recommendations to suggest how they think we can solve this problem.
One of the issues, as I understand it, is the question of how the city uses tax abatements. And for new development, for certain kinds of new development, if it was LEED, et cetera. Catherine, how does that work and how is that playing into this situation?
Unfortunately, Dan, I can't really answer that question. It's not part of this particular working group. It's not something that's the purview of the City Planning Commission. I do know that our elected officials certainly have heard from residents who have a lot of concerns about it. And how that will play out, I'm not sure, but that's not part of the charge of this specific working group.
Dan Dressman, can you throw any, or Dan Prevost, do you want to throw some light on that?
Yeah, I think we're hearing that a lot from our residents, that they feel that the tax abatements are driving a lot of the interest in new projects in the neighborhood. And that's something that, as Catherine said, is not getting handled as part of this working group process, but it is something that I think the community council will be, initiating a conversation with city council representatives in the coming weeks. Because I think it's something that our membership, certainly sees as a key link in the process.
Dan Dressman, anything to add to that?
Well, we obviously feel like the tax abatements have been had a positive impact overall in the city. The city provides 10, 15-year tax abatements on any new construction, and if it's LEED, it can go up to 15 years. We've seen some resurgence of many of the neighborhoods as a result of that. And I think one of the things we'd like to see, in particular in Hyde Park and Mount Lookout, is a higher maybe a percent of the abatement going towards renovation rather than new construction. We think that would maybe solve some of the current problems there.
Let me put it this way. Do other cities, if they have that sort of tax abatement for inside the city, do they target that in any way that certain neighborhoods are accessible to that, others aren't? And I guess I ask that question out of thinking that Hyde Park and Mount Lookout how much extra support do people capable of building in Mount Lookout and Hyde Park need?
I think one of the benefits the city actually derives from the tax abatement is the fact that they get the 2.1% earnings tax on all the new residents who come into the city. So that more than offsets the cost of the tax abatement. And three to one in many cases is what I've been told.
Okay. We have a call that I want to make sure that we get in. And Stephanie, you have a question?
Yeah, kind of a comment. I do live in Hyde Park and on a street where the houses sell like maybe between $350 for a little over $400. And recently there was a house around the corner that sold for $315. Nice little house. You know, somebody could have moved into the neighborhood for $315,000. And it was torn down, and it's now we're seeing on a couple streets be $750 and above. Which I get it in terms of development and extra tax money, abated tax money. But I think a lot of us are concerned that it starts to change the demographic. Everything can be looked at as profitable by tearing it down and turning it into a $750 to $1 million new home.
Dan Privo, let's let you respond to that.
Sure. I mean, Stephanie echoes some of the points that we're hearing from our residents. And they are, there's, while folks certainly want to see the, like to see the value of their own home go up, they also don't like to get, potentially priced out of their own neighborhood at the same time. So, as far as, that's about all I would say on that front in terms of, kind of the concerns that we're hearing.
So it is this. I mean, from the city's point of view, and Catherine, I know you can speak to certain things and not to others, but there is a policy here of general policy in the city of encouraging people to move into the city, to reverse the longstanding from 1950 on, the longstanding population decline of the city proper. And, these sorts of tax abatements, encouragement of development, et cetera, is part of that. Is that fair to say that that's one of the motivations here?
Dan, I guess I would say yes. Again, the tax abatement policy is not run through my department, so I don't feel totally comfortable talking about it. But yes, we are definitely, as a city, trying to increase our population. We're at about 300,000 now, and we would really like to increase our population again and have our neighborhoods be where people choose to live.
Yeah. I think we've seen the results already of the population increase as a result of some of the incentives that the city of Cincinnati and other communities like Blue Ash and there's other surrounding communities in Hamilton County that also offer a tax abatement have had in increasing the population overall. In fact, Hamilton County is one of the only urban counties in the state that had an increase in population over the last decade, which I think speaks volumes about its desirability, in particular the city of Cincinnati.
I will not ask Catherine to chime in on this, but I will ask maybe the two Dans, but start with Dan Privo. The mayor has taken a real interest in this particular issue and has been somebody who has driven the 90-day hold on demolition permits and put together this Are you finding that the mayor is particularly open to what your concerns are as residents of Hyde Park and Mount Lookout?
Well, I think his engagement, certainly played a role here. But, and I haven't heard, comments directly from him. I haven't engaged directly with him. But, I've certainly seen, city council, we've been involved in several of the hearings that the committees and council has had. And I get, the impression is that the city council members are also very very engaged on this issue. And so, we very much appreciate that and welcome that engagement.
So I guess what I'm getting at is the question of, is the fact that Hyde Park and Mount Lookout wealthier, more politically involved, do you get more attention than, someplace like Price Hill and have the ability to access the powers that be at City Hall?
I guess I hope that's not the case. You know, I hope that the mayor and city council represent all of their constituents equally. You know, I hope that's not the case.
Okay. So, anyway, I want to thank Dan Prevost, Dan Dressman, and Catherine Kehoe-Jurs for being with us today. Very good discussion.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.